This is such an intelligent film, such a terrific film, and heartbreaking as well. Tell us just briefly about each of these boys, you know, Andrew, Apache, and Harley.
Well, let's see. Sorry, just fixing my mic
we're,
here.
We're switching microphones. little technical issue
there
here.
There you go. You know, they're great kids. I met them in different ways. I met Apache in gym class, and it was in the middle of winter, and we had this amazing conversation. He was so soulful and smart, mm-hmm. but also going through a lot of stuff. His face was chapped, and he wasn't dressed warmly enough for the weather, and talked about how he was hungry. And we wanted to continue the conversation with him and understand, you know, what his experience was like.
Yeah. How about the other two?
We met Andrew in the park. He was hanging out at the picnic tables with some other guys and kind of playing the tough guy. And then we went home with him, and that tough guy stuff was immediately dropped. And there was this love that he mm-hmm. had with his mother and his sister and his dad. And we were so struck by their family and their bonds, despite having some real hard challenges. You know, one of the things the camera doesn't pick up is they had really nothing. They had just moved back to town, and their home was so, so spare. The camera can sometimes pick up clutter.
Yeah.
But there they just had very, very little, and it was really striking. And yet he was so optimistic. And
loving. How about Harley?
Harley, we met through his cousin. He lives with 9 members of his extended family, 4 generations under one roof. His grandmother, we call her Saint Betty. She works very, very hard and provides for everybody. But Harley was asleep on the couch. That's his bed. Mm-hmm. And I was just, you know, I was curious about the guy on the couch.
Hey, let me slow you down here and back up just a little bit. This notion that you made this film, you were in Rich Hill. You went to Rich Hill looking for these boys, or why Rich Hill?
Yeah, well, Rich Hill is my family hometown.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's, and my grandparents who lived there were like surrogate parents to me.
Mm-hmm.
My father died in Vietnam when I was very young, and my relationship with his parents was incredibly formative and important, and it was a connection to him. So whenever school was out, I went to Rich Hill. So I spent every summer and winter break there, and I loved visiting. But over the years, in my lifetime, it's really, you know, the population has dwindled and there are fewer jobs and businesses closed.
And so you wanted to do a doc on Rich Hill because...
Well, selfishly, initially, just to kind of reconnect with this place that I loved.
Yeah.
But I had to really also see that there were families there that was struggling. It's not Mayberry, and you know, it had to be more. To tell the truth, it had to be more than kind of a nostalgia piece. And you know, I felt like nobody was telling the story of these families in kind of a respectful way. There are lots of statistics, but the human side, the experience of it, isn't a part of the conversation.
Well, the human side, it's such a great point, and I guess that leads to the question I'm sure you're asked a lot, which is, how on earth did you get such access to these families who clearly allowed you to come into their lives, and they didn't even know the camera was there, it seemed like?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a lot of layers to that. Part of it was because, you know, I was sort of straddle insider-outsider status, but, you know, I was known. It's a small town. My grandmother was a third-grade school teacher and beloved. So, you know, I was a bit of a known quantity. But at the same time, I think there was some, you know, appreciation that anybody was knocking on their door. You know, even within the community of Rich Hill, the families that are struggling are kind of invisible, and people aren't knocking on their doors very much.
But they let you see things that almost any other family you can think of wouldn't want you to see.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't wrap it up with a bow, or gloss over kind of the hard stuff. And I think we were there for long enough that that there was a trust. And I hope ultimately we didn't do anything to violate that trust. But, you know, it was me and it was my cousin, Andrew, my co-director, working with me. And we were just there, in and out of conversation with them, in and out of observation.
Yeah. Steve Tracy, Bob, Cynthia, yeah, way in here. Steve Walker. Yeah.
Tracy, did you always intend to do it through the lives of three teenage boys, or did you want to do families or the town, and then it shrunk down to these three stories?
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, it started with a wider net, and but quite soon it was families, and then it really crystallized with kids in particular, because it would be harder to dismiss, we felt like, you know, they're often families are kind of written off like this because they're living off the system, or they're lazy, or they have some sort of inferior moral compass, or they've, you know, they smoke too much, and so therefore, you know, let's just write them off. But with kids, it's harder to do that. It's harder to say, like, you know, that they chose the circumstances that they're in. I mean, of course, the parents not too long ago were kids themselves. All the parents were teenagers when they became parents. So we hoped whatever empathy people felt for the kids would extend to the parents.
We're talking about the documentary Rich Hill, set in Rich Hill, Missouri, about 70 miles south of Kansas City. The film opens in Kansas City this weekend, getting rave reviews, and deservedly shows. So, Cynthia Haynes, go ahead.
Tracy, a little bit about your background, and how did you get financing to create this project?
Well, at first we didn't, and it was on my credit cards, as I think with any probably independent endeavor, and you just have to believe in believe in the project and what you are wanting to do. But after a year, when things were about as maxed as they could possibly get, and we'd sent out a lot of grants and whatnot, Sundance came in with a production grant. And that was huge. I was in the carpool lane picking up my daughters from school, and I got that call, and it was just like, oh, my gosh, you know, the heavens have opened up. We can keep going. And then with their stamp of approval, other grants followed, and we were able to have the support of the MacArthur Foundation, which was a big deal. That allowed us to finish production and hire an editor.
You get support from MacArthur. How, Tracy? How does that happen mid-shoot?
Well, I submitted for an application for that grant like 7 months before it actually happened. You know, there are many, many, many stages, and I'm sharing with them footage and talking with them about the evolution of the project. You know, what was once maybe families is now these three kids, and here are these three kids, and here are their circumstances. And so, you know, they were aware of it for some time. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I think about March of 2013, they came through. So it was really, really great.
I'm kind of curious, Tracy. We talk about journalistic objectivity, but I don't know how you could conceivably have it. You remember when Steve James was making Hoop Dreams, he ended up paying the electric bill for the family he was covering. he didn't mention it in the movie. We only found out afterwards. But when you're up face to face, nose to nose with these circumstances, what does that do to you?
Yeah, you know, we hope that the film would have a kind of objectivity, and it wouldn't be about us making the film. But at the same time, we were much more involved than one would imagine. You can't really keep objectivity and, you know, sort of a poker face when folks are struggling and their stresses and. Yeah, so we had lots of conversation. I mean, I wish I could wave a magic wand and fix it all. That wasn't possible. But, but we were very involved. I mean, even in the movie, if people see it, you know, there were moments when, you know, like Harley's walking out of school and we were talking to him about, you know, maybe you ought to turn back around and head back in there.
Well, there were moments clearly when they were that your subjects were turning to you and asking you practically for advice. I mean, they were using you as a backboard to bounce their feelings off of.
Yeah, yeah. We gave them a lot of advice and continue. I mean, that's the thing that I also feel very strongly about is there's the film, and then there's also these relationships that we now have with these families that is ongoing. I mean, you can't just kind of dip into somebody's life and have that level of connection and intimacy and then say, you know, thank you very much. See you later.
I think you're telling me you're a person first and a filmmaker second.
That's probably right.
Yeah,
that's
Cynthia.
I understand how important the Sundance seal of approval is. I just want your reaction to the reception for you in the film at the True False Film Festival in Columbia. What kind of experience was that?
Oh, that was amazing. I had had a little bit I had my expectations set because my co-director Andrew Palermo lived in Columbia for quite some time and was good friends with the
the Paul and all the other guys.
Yeah, and he'd even done a bumper one year for the festival. So I had my expectations somewhat high, but yeah, it was an amazing, amazing festival. My expectations were incredibly, you know, were blown out of the water. I mean, the audiences.
Standing ovations.
Well, and that was incredible. We had all the kids there, all the families, and a huge, I can't remember the name of the venue, but this big, big, big theater, and people got to their feet, and that was...
And it's so richly deserved. So richly deserved, Steve Walker.
One question, yeah. An irony for me, now that the film's out and starting to get more widely seen, as I walk into the station today, I see the two of the boys from the film get out of a town car. What is this? Literally. What? With the driver, yes.
Was that your town car? I walked in here too. I was like, holy shit.
I think Tracy was with them too. But, yeah. But what has this done to their view of the world? You know, how has this opened their eyes?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the little experiences of glamour, which are you know, fleeting and silly, but
sure,
also really fun. I mean, you know, I have to step out of the way sometimes because I wonder about it. You know, I even thought about the expense of going to Sundance in the first place. And we talked a lot about it. Like, this, you know, this costs a lot of money to bring you guys all out to Utah and put you up in a condo during the height of, you know, this festival when everybody jacks up their prices. And would you rather have this money in your pocket? You know, I think ultimately everybody wanted to go. They wanted to be a part of the experience. And I get that because that's the kind of thing you really can't put a price tag on. But more than, you know, some of the, you know, the ways that we get from here to there, which isn't always in a town car, but was very nice that Kansas City is, you know, that we're getting that here. It's the reaction from audiences, and it's being in a theater and having people respond to the film and respond to them personally and say, you know, I care about you, or you are, you know, listen, I heard your story and I get what you're going through and I think you have a shot, you know, or you know, I'm thinking about you. And that's a huge shift. I mean, that's when you've kind of been, you feel like trash, people walk by you, you don't feel like you matter, you're from the wrong side of the tracks. People don't tell you that you matter very often or that they care about your future that much. They kind of write you off.
You know, Tracy, again, we're talking about the documentary Rich Hill, about three boys coming of age in Rich Hill, Missouri. You know, most moviegoers, the cliche is you want some hope. You know, you want something to latch on to, you know, as you go through an experience of seeing this film and leaving it. You don't get a lot of hope here, you know, watching these three guys. And I'm just wondering, what about that? What's to be said about what's ahead for them? Because you're trying to find something, and I'm not sure I saw it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have great hope for them. At the same time, you know, there's the reality of their lives, and it's unclear what is next for them. I mean, I think the three kids in the film, trajectories have shifted in part just by their participation in this film, and the fact that they get to experience audiences who are supportive of them emotionally, and some even materially. And, you know, that has changed their experience, and I hope their futures. You know, it's too soon to tell for sure. But, you know, we didn't wrap it up with a bow. We didn't say this is the one policy that needs to, you know,
be changed.
Yeah.
Because you walk away from the film with a greater understanding of just how intractable poverty is and how elusive a simple solution would be. And if that's one of the outcomes of this film, that strikes me as an incredible public service.
Well, thank you. I mean, I do hope that it can be a real meaningful part of a conversation about how complex it is and how it's not, you know, one easy fix. But, you know, I also hope that there is some underlying current of hope, because, you know, these kids, their hearts haven't been broken yet.
Yeah.
You know, they still have. And that's another reason to tell it from the perspective of kids. I mean, their parents, they have kind of been beaten up enough to have their hearts somewhat broken, to have their expectations lowered. But the kids, they still, you know, they still kind of believe in themselves. It's really unclear how they're going to get to where they want to go, but they still
Just one final point. The other thing that struck me about this documentary is you brought a certain poetry to it with the music, with the lighting, with some of the shots, and I'm wondering why.
We really wanted this to be an emotional experience. You know, there are the documentaries that offer the statistics and that have the outside experts that comment on it. But we wanted, you know, number one, to take people to this place that we loved, to have it be somewhat immersive and cinematic so that you go somewhere else. But then we also really wanted there to be moments of reflection. And we wanted audiences to feel the small moments. And so, you know, that was part of our intention in the treatment of it.
The film, again, is Rich Hill. The director here, Tracy Droz-Tragos. Again, it's the winner of the Documentary Grand Jury Prize at Sundance. It opens in Kansas City this weekend. What a pleasure to have you here. All the best, Tracy.
Thank you so much.